ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय श्रीमद् भागवतम कांटो 11 Chapter 14, text 3, translation by some of Srila Prabhupada's disciples. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Kalena Nashta Pralaye Vani Yang Veda Sangita Maya dau brahmane prokta dharmo yasyang madatmakah. Translation: The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, by the influence of time, the transcendental sound of Vedic knowledge was lost at the time of annihilation. Therefore, when the subsequent creation took place, I spoke the Vedic knowledge to Brahma, because I myself am the religious principles enunciated in the Vedas. Purport. Lord Krishna explains to Uddhava that although many processes and concepts of spiritual realizations are described in the Vedas ultimately recommend devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Lord Krishna is the reservoir of all pleasure, and his devotees directly enter into the Lord's haladini, or pleasure-giving potency. Somehow or other, one must fix one's mind in Lord Krishna, and that is not possible without devotional service. One who has not developed his attraction to Lord Krishna cannot restrain the senses from inferior engagements. Since other Vedic processes do not actually award Lord Krishna to the practitioner, they cannot offer the highest benefit in life. The transcendental sound of the Vedas is itself the highest evidence. But one whose senses and mind are entangled in sense gratification and mental speculation, and whose heart is therefore covered by material dust, cannot directly receive the transcendental Vedic message. Thus one cannot appreciate the exalted position of devotional service to the Lord. Two verses prior to this, Sri Uddhava said, my dear Krishna, the learned sages who explain Vedic literature recommend various processes for perfecting one's life. Considering these varieties of viewpoint, my Lord, please tell me whether all these processes are equally important or whether one of them is supreme. It's a very important question, isn't it? Seeing as there's so much still today and always will be in this material world, so many different ideas propagated, and everyone will say it is the best. Everyone will say that this idea is the best. Actually, when I first went to an ISKCON center, Bhaktivedanta Mana, I had a similar question. I said that, I asked the devotees that everyone says their path is the best. Why should I believe you? So that is the question that every truth seeker should ask. Mostly people are not truth seekers, they are, Bhaktisthan Sasar Thakur made a play on this word. They're not seeking truth, they're seeking, what's the word? He's some obscure English word he used. But the idea that people are seeking for money. They go to God or they go to a sadhu, or they don't go anywhere, even anything religious, but they're all seeking personal gain. They don't try to find out what is my actual position in this situation that I'm in. But they just without making any philosophical effort whatsoever, they just presume that I am this body and I'm meant to enjoy it. So my interest is served by any means by which I can make arrangements for enjoyment of the body, of the mind. So religion is conceived of in terms, for persons who are religious, not if you conceive of your self-interest as pleasure, lukha, that's the word that truth seekers and lukha hunters. So if we conceive of ourselves as this body, then, and that our self-interest to be in terms of this body, then we don't need religion. So why are people religious? Well, they think it's another means to fulfill my material needs. And apart from the gross needs of the body, we see that most people, they can fulfill the basic needs of their body. But above and beyond that, there's the much bigger need of the ego. Just like in modern life, it's considered a necessity to have some form of artificial transportation, beginning with the humble bicycle, going up to the moped, then the motorbike, and then the car. And some people are very rich, not many people in this country, but in America there are many who have their own private airplane. So mostly the car. In India, I used to see many bicycles, then it became many motorbikes, and gradually it's becoming more and more cars. So for getting from one end of Salem to the other, you can have a Maruti Suzuki 800. They still make them? 800s? Yeah. They cost the very small sum of what? 3 lakhs or something like that.
2,40,000.
2,40,000. And the Nano never caught on. It's too cheap for people's prestige. Otherwise, why shouldn't they buy a Nano? It's also the same price as Maruti. Okay. I heard it was going to be 1 lakh. Probably it's 1 lakh plus taxes, like these airfares they offer you. You can fly from London to Dublin for £1. And then you get the bill and it's £90 because of all the extra things which they add on. So anyway, but you can also buy an Audi car for more than 1 crore. 10 crores. You can buy cars for 10 crores. Made in India. That's probably with the import duty. Now they're going to make Jaguars in India. Mercedes is already being made just down the road in Chennai. So, why spend... Let's see, it's a bit rough on my brain to have to do some calculations after a late night. 10 lakhs. It's 40 times more. You say a 1 crore car, it's 40 times more than a Maruti Suzuki 800. Why spend 40 times more? Well, it's a bit more comfortable, but it doesn't make that much difference if you're only going from one side of the city to the other. Ego. Look at me. I'm not driving a little useless Maruti Suzuki. I am driving a 1 crore motor car. Why do all these ministers, when they go on the road, they go with police cars in the front and in the back and sirens? They don't need all this. It's just to show, I am a big man, that's all, or I'm a big woman. Some of them are really big. I mean, no one can deny that the chief minister of Tamil Nadu is a very big woman in all respects. Have to be careful what you say, because big ego, and they don't like to hear things like this. Don't send this to her. So, yeah, people approach God also, some religious process. God, improve my condition. If there's any God, make me big. Or they decide that I'm God. Although no one except themselves will agree. And maybe they can get some followers. Rascals. So, people also in religious processes, whatever people identify with, they try to promote that as the best. Or if it's clearly not the best, then they go to the other extreme and say that it's the worst. Because it has to be the most something or other. If we're not the best, we're the worst. You go to prison. What did you do? I just stole some clothes from a shop. Yeah, useless. I killed 20 policemen and slit their throats. Oh, really? Big guy. Whoa. In the prison, the people have more, the more evil they are, the more, of course, the child abusers, even the prisoners don't like them. They hate them. Anyway, I wanted to go through this a little quickly. So Uddhava says, my dear Lord, you have clearly explained the process of unalloyed devotional service by which a devotee removes all material association from his life, enabling him to fix his mind on you. So practically, Uddhava gives the answer to his question by saying that, well, anyway, the best process is bhakti, but then why do all these people have all these different ideas? Why are there so many different religions and ideas in the world? And then Krishna goes on to explain. The verse we just read now, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Kalena Nashta Palaye Vani Yang Veda Sangita Mayadau Brahmane Prokta Dharma Yasyang Adatmakaha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, by the influence of time, the transcendental sound of Vedic knowledge was lost at the time of annihilation. Therefore, when the subsequent creation took place, I spoke the Vedic knowledge to Brahma, because I myself am the religious principles enunciated in the Vedas. Next verse. Lord Brahma spoke this Vedic knowledge to his eldest son Manu, and the seven great sages headed by Bhrigu Muni then accepted the same knowledge from Manu. So this clearly is parallel to the statements at the beginning of chapter 4 of Bhagavad Gita. Kalena Nashta, here in this verse, and Sakaleneha Mahata Yoga Nashta, Nashta Parantapa. By the mighty influence of time, this was lost, this yoga science. Here, Krishna says it was lost at the time of annihilation. And then he spoke it to Brahma, who spoke it to Manu. In Bhagavad Gita, we have that Krishna spoke it directly to Manu, who spoke it to his son, and here we have again Brahma spoke to Manu, who spoke it to his who spoke it to the seven great sages. Manu is here described as Svaputraya, unto his son, Manu, the son of Brahma. From the forefathers, headed by Bhrigu Muni and other sons of Brahma, appeared many children and descendants who assumed different forms as demigods, demons, human beings, guhyakas, siddhas, gandharvas, vidyadharas, charanas, kindevas, kingnaras, nagas, kingpurushas, and so on. All of the many universal species, along with their respective leaders, appeared with different natures and desires generated from the three modes of material nature. Therefore, because of the different characteristics of the living entities within the universe, there are a great many Vedic rituals, mantras, and rewards. Thus, due to the great variety of desires and natures among human beings, there are many different theistic philosophies of life which are handed down through tradition, custom, and the cyclic succession. There are other teachers who directly support atheistic viewpoints. O best among men, the intelligence of human beings is bewildered by my illusory potency, and thus, according to their own activities and whims, they speak in innumerable ways about what is actually good for people. Some say that people will be happy by performing pious religious activities. Others say that happiness is attained through fame, sense gratification, truthfulness, self-control, peace, self-interest, political influence, opulence, renunciation, consumption. That's a translation of the word bhojanam. It could be translated in various ways. One way is eating. You know, just generally trying to consume what's in this world. Consumption is also the name of a disease. Interestingly, is it? It's an old name for, it's got a new name now. I can't remember what the new name is, but more technical name, but consumption. Gout, maybe. Sacrifice, penance, charity, vows, regulated duties, or strict disciplinary regulation. Each process has its proponents. All the persons I have just... Oh, I'll go back now. So, while practicing Krishna consciousness, we may sometimes wonder that there are so many philosophies. You can read books, anthologies of different philosophies. There's so many different philosophies in the world. And we may think that, well, how is that? If the truth is one, this is what Uddhava is basically answering. If the truth is one, then why are religions many? And why are there so many different opinions in this world? Now, those who claim to know the truth, they may answer this in different ways. In the culture that I was raised in, we learned from a young age that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. Whatever that means, no one really explained to me what it means, but no one explaining what anything means wasn't on the menu. There was no option for explaining things. So then how do you explain all the different opinions? There's a one-word answer to that in the non-explanatory process, religious process, that I was brainwashed into. What's it called? What do you say? Belief. Anything else? Satan. Anything else if you believe anything except what the particular church you go to tells you, because of course they're different Christians and they all have different opinions. then it's all Satan. Just the influence of Satan, that's all. Some angel, according to Christian mythology, there was an angel who was living happily in heaven with Jesus. I guess he must have been there at that time. He hadn't come down to save us for all our sins. I guess that was before Adam ate the apple. They're all living happily, but it wasn't a story of they all lived happily ever after, because Lucifer thought, well, I'm just as good as God. So God kicked him out of heaven, and then he grew some horns, and his angel wings turns into Batman wings, and he became the tempter, and he tempts people. He comes in their mind and tells them all bad things. So this is the understanding. It's a one-stop answer to all the problems. Either you're with Jesus according to our church, which is the only church which has got it right, or you're with Satan. That's all. In Dublin, which is the capital of Ireland, it's also a city in the United States of America, but I was in Ireland approximately 77. So we had rented a house as a traveling book distribution base in a new housing estate on the edges of Dublin. Now it's not on the edges, it's nowhere near the edges. So we used to have a Sunday program, and local children would come and join and happily join us in chanting Hare Krishna. Then they stopped coming. So I saw one of them on the road one day and asked, why did you stop coming? And he said, because my mother told me that this is all Satan. There you go. Another anecdote I've told several times. From one time I was in our London temple, Soho Street, center of London. And I walked out, and a Christian handed me a pamphlet on which there was a drawing of Satan, which means some guy with fangs and horns and looking extremely evil, holding a plate. And on the plate was cabbages, carrots, cauliflowers, apples, with quotes from the Bible about why you're supposed to eat meat. And if you're a vegetarian, it's all Satan. You'll go to hell. Because we have a vegetarian restaurant in front of, adjoined to the temple. So this is the answer to all the, if you ever have any questions, the answer is Satan. If you don't understand anything or you don't believe anything, it's all Satan. That's all. So, the Vedic knowledge which we're discussing here, which according to certain people is Satan, it's all the influencer, it's all because of Satan that anyone could believe in this, is more nuanced. It gives, if anyone can get out of the fear of burning in hell forever for asking questions and hoping for intelligent answers, which might seem to make sense, because after all, if you say that God gave the Bible or the Quran, I mean, it's a communication, which means it's one intelligence speaking to another, right? That's what communication is supposed to be. One intelligent being is conveying something to someone else. So according to the interpretations of the Bible or the Quran, that God communicates this much to you, and you just have to believe it without thinking. But how can you do that actually? How can you believe anything without any thought whatsoever? So they have scholars, biblical scholars and Quranic scholars. So they're allowed to think. But you're not allowed to think outside the dogma of the church or the particular branch of Islam that you belong to. You're allowed to think only within that. But we find here that Krishna says that yes, there is Maya. There is Maya. Another simplistic solution to the question of why are there so many different theories is that, well, it's all true. Everything's true. There's no specific truth. Whatever works for you is truth. If you believe in Jesus, great. If you don't believe in any God whatsoever, great. Everything's good, everything nice, everything wonderful. Of course, this is another cheating process. Because things don't work like that. For instance, if the idea that, well, let everyone have their own opinion, and then we can all live peacefully together. But for people whose opinion is that we have to proselytize, we have to convert people, we have to smash the heathens, for people who don't believe in that this philosophy would work nicely if everyone believed in it, just like every other philosophy. But people don't. Other people say, no, that's not true. Jesus is the way, the truth, and life, and no one comes to God except through Him. And other people say, Allahu Akbar, illa Allah wa illa Allah Muhammadan Rasulullah, etc. So, they conflict. And even if you set up some kind of utopian society in which everyone just interacts very nicely with each other and they're nice to each other, they smile at each other. Remember, the most important thing is to smile. Heard it from an ISKCON guru-to-be. Most important thing is to always smile. Okay, I smiled. Sorry, I don't do it all the time. I'm just a neophyte devotee. And so. So, there's some problems. What are the problems with that? Can you think of any problems with this idea that we're all just nice to each other, we all live peacefully? Well, four main problems I can think of are janma mritu jaravat. You still have to die, you rascal. You still have to get disease. You could smile as your disease, but mostly people don't because it's arranged by Maya, because we're forgetting Krishna. And suffering comes. We can't avoid it. Who can deny that we have to suffer? Birth, death, old age, and disease. All suffering. And apart from that, you say, well, now I'm healthy, but still there's the... From the other angle, you can also take it adhibhautik, adhidaivik, adhyatmik. Or in order, I guess we should say adhyatmik, adhibhautik, adhidaivik. And you may think I'm very healthy, but you don't know, for instance, that you have a tumor which is going to manifest soon, and then you'll be in hospital with chemotherapy or whatever. That's quite common. People say, very healthy, going on, and then just got this pain in the back of my neck, and well, I guess I might as well go and see a doctor. It's going to say, well, you've got cancer. Really? Oh. Or this thing, why I'm sitting in the sun every day, is because of, it's some symptom which I can't remember the name of, it's osteo something or other, prior to osteoporosis. You don't feel anything, but your bones are just, the bone mass is just decreasing. So, especially as you get older, you can just a little pressure and the bone will break, which can be extremely painful. So, you may not know it, or even if you are very healthy and so on, and still you have to grow old and die, and get another body, and another body, and another body, and another body. So, yeah, there are different theories. Why are there different theories? Why are there different philosophies if the truth is one? The truth is one, but also the truth seekers are not many more than one. Manushanang sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye. Not many people are interested. We didn't come to this world for the sake of the truth, we came to this world for the sake of falsity. So, most people, they're not even interested in any philosophical discussion of what is the actual purpose in life. And of those who are, people may take it as some kind of intellectual sense gratification, to have some intellectual discussions. And many different philosophies come because people, even unknown to themselves, they consider themselves to be philosophers, but they start with some axiom in their mind, which they didn't really consider the axiom. For instance, they just presume that we're in this world to be happy. And therefore you get humanists, for instance, who they consider religion is the greatest blight on the history of the human race. So what do we need religion for? So we're just all here to, we'll all be good humans together. And then there are people who say, well, what about the whales? We shouldn't kill the whales, we should be nice to the animals and do good for the environment. And so it's expanded concept from humanism, environmentalism. But still, they don't consider these words of Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, which is, this is not a religious dogma. It's a fact which anyone can see. Janma mrityu jaravyadhi dukha doshanu darshanam. I read this book, this Richard Dawkins, The God Delusion. So I was looking out for what's, because he has his answers to everything. He's the most famous atheist of the modern age. They didn't knight him yet, I don't think. So it's actually extremely weak. I think any devotee who's read Bhagavad Gita a couple of times could just knock the spiffle out of him. But what's the purpose of, if you're an atheist, what is the purpose of life? And what is the meaning to life? And he said that, well, people are, someone asked me that once, and then I said, well, I expect to have a very good meal. And actually we went to the pub and we all had a good meal. Pretty weak, isn't it? Why are you campaigning all over the world if the purpose of life is just to have a good meal? That's all. There's nothing more. Kimanyat kama haitukam. What is there? What is there more than lust? What is there more than material desire? just so very, very weak. There's no more to, because they have the idea that, well, again, they don't look into what is the nature of consciousness. Dawkins is an avowed Darwinist. I guess you say neo-Darwinist, because Darwin's theories don't fit at all, so you have to upgrade them every so often with the latest findings of science. So he's a firm believer. I believe in Jesus. I believe in Darwin. I believe, it's belief that life has come into being by the interaction of different chemicals, which is not a scientific statement, it's a religious statement, actually, or the religion of atheism, it's scientism. So people start off with different axioms. They just presume this must be right. Hitler started off with, we're Germans, and the Germans are the best. But right now we're not. We lost the First World War, and we're under the boots of these nasty French people. Next, we hate the French. And we hate the French, but we hate the Jews more. And we're better people than, we're better, so all these people neighboring us, we just kick them out of our country, which should belong to us, and that makes sense. We need more land, so get out of our land. So it started off with the idea that we are Germans. So it start off at a certain point, but they don't investigate the premise on which their philosophy is built. And they always start off at a point which precludes all proper or genuine philosophical understanding. Because they start off with a wrong axiom. And you may say, well, why does God allow this? If there's God, why does He allow it? And some people will say Satan. It's not only a childish and weak explanation, but it's actually a very devious or uncharitable, in as much as, this is one of the questions I had when I was a kid, after being indoctrinated with Catholic theory for a few years, and I just started to think about it a little bit. And one of the questions was, well, there are different systems of religion throughout the world, and why do you say this is best? And then later I came to understand there's actually very sophisticated philosophical understanding, far more sophisticated than anything in the West. I mean, even the atheism in India is far more sophisticated than in the West. So why do you say that yours is the best? Why? On what grounds? Someone's trying to convince me to be a Christian. So, okay, you're trying to interact with me on the platform of intelligence, but then we've got something much more intelligent to offer you. And it contains all the basic elements of what you say, that there is God, that He wants to deliver us, that we have eternal life with God in the spiritual world, but also a far more sophisticated system of understanding that makes a lot more sense. That's another of my questions. Well, why does God send you to hell forever if you just blow it in one lifetime, if you don't hear about Jesus? And they don't have any good answer. I don't interact much. Generally, we advise not to interact with Christians much. In the last few years, a couple of times, If you try to have any philosophical argument with them, within 5 minutes you can just shut them up. Just ask them a few questions and then they're just... They don't know what to say. They don't have any answer. They never thought about it. They're going everywhere trying to preach to people and make them Christian. And then you just ask them some simple question like, well, you say that if you don't believe in Jesus, you go to hell forever. What about all the people before Jesus? What about the people, for instance, in Laos, which is a country, landlocked country to the northeast of Thailand? If you know where Thailand is, or you ever heard of Thailand? Where now it's being rampantly taken over by Christian missionaries. But for generations, there was no access to anyone hearing of Jesus. It was a landlocked country, not important economically, politically, or in any other way. Small, full of jungles and tribes. And it was, there were some local kings, and then there was communist rule. And there was no act for generations. People had no possibility to hear about Jesus. What happens to them? And does God favor the Americans more because they have the opportunity to hear about Jesus? And people in Laos, they didn't have any opportunity. And they don't have any answers to these questions. It's like it never occurred to them. So, this is a much better explanation that Krishna gives here. That there is the original truth. It is disseminated in this world. But there are different people with different aspirations, different ideas. Sometimes they have a different theory just because they want to show themselves to be different. And na sang yasya rishya matang na bhinnam. You can't be known as a rishi unless you have your own opinion. So you have to think of something else. It's like you have to get a PhD, you have to make some original thesis on something or other that no one's ever thought about or said or done before. So it's like that. To be a rishi, you have to have some new opinion. So it's like that. And people, they come up with all different ideas. And just like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, material nature is immutable. Endlessly mutable. So it's different ideas and philosophies, they're also endlessly mutable. You can always change it or give some new twang to it. But it all comes down to forgetfulness of Krishna. But all different varieties. But all the varieties you can basically classify when there's this gross sense gratification and rejection of gross sense gratification. Bhog tyag. That's all. People are interested in enjoying the mind and the senses. And then some people think, well, I'm fed up with that. Let's get spiritual. Okay, now we'll reject all that. But they don't have a sense of subordination to Krishna. They don't have any love for Krishna. There's neither in bhog or tyag is there love. In bhog, there's some idea of love for sense gratification. And in tyag, there's no love, or sometimes they have some idea of love everyone, love everything. It's all theoretical. So many ideas come into being. Krishna inspires them because people want to forget Krishna. So he gives them so many varieties of ways or so many varieties of theories by which they can forget Krishna. Yeah, for instance, some say that people will be happy by performing pious religious activities. You do some pious acts, perform a yajna, feed the sadhus, go on pilgrimage, open a hospital. This is pious. You'll be happy. God will bless you. God will bless you that you can go to the heavenly planets, and in your next life you can again be born in a pious family, and then you can again feed the poor, feed the pigeons, and go to the heavenly planets. Tetam Puktva Swargam. What is this? Chine Puni. Evang Trai Dharma Manu Prapana Gata Gatam Kama Kama Labhante. Just coming and going, back and forward. But in the meantime, if you slip up like Maharaj Nriga, you'll be going up, down, up, down, up, down, whoop, slip, and fall in a well like a lizard. So it's not guaranteed that you'll go up and down. Others say that happiness is attained through fame. Try and be famous. Whatever you do, you should be famous. Shoot John Lennon. That's one way to get famous. That's what the great bard, John Lennon, apparently the guy who shot him, which was about 30 years ago now, did so just to have his name in the newspaper. So one way to get famous is kill someone else, or kill someone who is famous, and then you automatically become famous. Sense gratification. Happiness is attained by sense gratification. Well, you don't have to be a big philosopher to promote that one. That's the axiom, or the false axiom on which the whole mature world is going. Truthfulness, be very truthful. Yes, we should be very truthful. Like the Brahmin who went to hell being truthful. Because he thought, I have to be truthful, I can't tell a lie. So, that person you want to kill is over there. So, the Brahmin went to hell. Self-control. You can be happy by self. My mind is completely out of control. So let me control it. Then I'll be peaceful. Then I'll be happy. That is, it's not necessarily a purely spiritual motive to control the mind. In fact, people whose minds are so grossly out of control, they may be given a drug just to calm their mind. It's very common. There are different... What's the word for that? Drugs, they affect the consciousness? Psychotropic? Or what's the word? They affect the consciousness. We used to call them uppers and downers. That's amphetamines, barbiturates, There are some drugs, if you're feeling very depressed, they give you a boost. And others, if the mind is too active, they depress the activity. So, you get up in the morning, you feel depressed. Then you feel, and then at night you can't get to sleep. Then you go. So it's like you're just drugs, drugged up. That's all. So there's self-control. That's the excuse that why so many sadhus they take ganja. Helps to control the mind. Makes the mind very peaceful, meditative. You see, a cloud of smoke, and their consciousness is merging in a cloud of the impersonal Brahman. It's generally kind of Shaiva Babas. They all, you don't see in South India much. Apparently at the Kumbh Mela, it was like one big cloud of ganja there. That's what sadhus do, right? They smoke ganja. So, self-control. Peace. Peace. Peace is... This is very similar to that... There's one purport, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in Chaitanya Charitamrita, comes either in that verse or just close to that Atendra Priti Vancha Tare Bole Kam, and he gives a whole list of different endeavors that may be indulged in for sense gratification, such as social service, religion, altruism. And he's saying, well, these are all very nice, good things, but he's saying it's all just for sense gratification, that's all. That's all. So, political influence, self-interest, everyone has their own, every process has its proponents. That you should be, you should, how you can really, what you really have to do in life is to join the DNK, someone may say. What's that? What's the long form? Dravida? You know I'm not going to be able to say it, that's why you're smiling. Some, what does it translate into English? Upliftment of Dravidian society. I see. No God. That's upliftment, rascals. So, here's an interesting purport here. Probably taken from Saraswati Thakur's purport. Dharmam Ake refers to those atheistic philosophers called Kama Mimamsakas. Dharma. We're talking about Dharma here. Who state that one should not waste time worrying about a kingdom of God that no one has ever seen and from which no one has ever returned. Rather, one should expertly utilize the laws of karma, performing fruitive activities in such a way that one will always be well situated. That's like that. Gata, gatang, kama, kama, labhante. You go to heaven, enjoy for a long time, come back, do some sacrifices, go up again, and go on like this. Concerning fame, it is said that as long as the fame of a human being is sung in the pious planets, he may live for thousands of years in material heaven. That's another thing. People are interested that after I die, my name will be remembered. So I have to do so. I have to become the prime minister, get my statue put, or write some book that everyone will remember, or do something that I can be remembered after death. Karmam refers to Vedic texts like the Kama Sutra, as well as millions of modern books that advise one about sex pleasure. Some people state that the highest virtue in life is honesty. That sounds good, doesn't it? Be honest. Always be honest, never tell a lie, but their whole life is based on falsity. If you're not surrendering to Krishna, then it's all dishonesty. As Srila Prabhupada often used, I think that's from Hitopadesh. You speak about the honest thieves, they do some robbery, and then they say, well, we should share between us all of this stolen money, we should share it fairly and justly and honestly, you see. There's a saying in English, dignity among thieves, that they have their own code of dignity. What you have to do, not do, and all this. Others say that the highest virtue in life is self-control, peace of mind, and so on. Each viewpoint has proponents and so-called scriptures. Just like, for instance, just like some people refer to the Bible, so other people they'll refer to Das Kapital, books of Karl Marx, or someone will refer to Richard Dawkins' books as the. It says here, Richard Dawkins says. Oh, really? Okay. Salam, Richard Dawkins. If Dawkins said it, must be true. There's some idea like this. Maybe you don't all know who Richard Dawkins is. Well, you didn't lose anything. But he's a very convinced proponent of atheism in the English-speaking world. As far as I know, he didn't spread his mercy to other languages yet. But you have already your... Who's that? Periyar? in Tamil Nadu. See, it's not anything new. Atheism is not some new philosophy. It's not that now we're really now we've made scientific discoveries and we've proved that there's no God. It's nothing new. Such blather of deluded people. So, others say that law, order, and morality are the highest good. So that's all right. It's good to have law and order and morality, but birth, death, old age, and disease. It's not the highest goal of life in and of itself. Whereas others still propose political influence as the real self-interest of human beings. And there are hundreds of books you can see. Every day some new book comes out. How to make your life successful. The 7 habits of highly successful people. There are 4 habits which, successful or not successful, you can't avoid. They're called birth, death, old age and disease. These idiots talking about how to make your life successful with just completely ignoring or being oblivious to the fact that there is birth, death, old age and disease. I mean, just on this basis alone, we can, just as that one line, we can understand that the Bhagavad Gita has got much more serious knowledge to offer than in all these Bible and Quran and everything put together. They don't consider this at all. They think you're born, and then you die, and then you go to heaven. So it actually, to go from there to the atheistic idea that you're born and you die and you're finished, it's not much, it's not a big step. But if we understand that we are eternal, we're not born actually, we're just put in a different cell, that's all. Before we were in the prison, there are 8,400,000 varieties of cells. And we just move from one cell to another, that's all. Some state that one should give away one's material possessions to the needy. Or we should share everything, as in communism. As a kid, I read a story of one boy, his elder brother, this was about, I guess, the 1920s in England it was set in, his elder brother became a Bolshevik. So they're from a fairly well-to-do, rich family. So his elder brother had some fancy camera, which in those days only well-to-do people had such things. So he heard this idea that we should, he heard his brother speaking that we should share everything, we should all be equal. So the younger brother took his camera and messed it up, and the elder brother became really, what are you doing? So, well, you should share everything, and everything belongs to everyone else, and that was the end of his elder brother's Bolshevism. Bolshevism? I don't know how to pronounce it. You wouldn't say it in Russian, that's an anglicization. There were 2 groups of communists after the Russian Revolution. Hmm? 2 main groups. Yeah, and the other path, they killed them all. And then there was only one path left. What are the other ones called? Menshevik, yeah. Lesser path. That's what you learned. You went to school in communist Russia, so. Naturally, they taught you that the Bolsheviks were the real ones. There weren't any Mensheviks left to protest. So anyway, going on, text 11. Krishna continues, all the persons I have just mentioned obtain temporary fruits from their material work. Who can argue? Well, some people would argue, no, we go to heaven and we're eternally, we get eternal fruits. But there are so many philosophical problems with their theories that no thoughtful person should take them seriously. In that way, you have to I must admit, I do have some sympathy for Dawkins and company, because if the theism that you're presented with is this childish, not only in the sense of being extremely simplistic and stupid philosophically, but also very spiteful, just like children are spiteful. So it's like they want to take, the main pleasure in heaven, it seems, will be looking down at the people in hell and enjoying how this, and actually this Thomas Aquinas, who's the greatest theologian after, well, one of two great theologians in Christian tradition, and Luther if you're a Protestant. Anyway, he's a massive influence on Christian thought. That was his conception of heaven. That the main thing is you look down and you take pleasure in watching the people suffering in hell. That's not pious at all. It's nasty. So if you're confronted with that, then you can understand why someone would reject it. But then to go from a childish, or to use a fancy word, puerile conception of God to a puerile conception of no God is not really progress. So, all the persons I've just mentioned obtain temporary fruits from their material work. Indeed, the meager and miserable situations they achieve bring future unhappiness and are based on ignorance. Even while enjoying the fruits of their work, such persons are filled with lamentation. And we see that it's observable that people who have more money, that their position is aspired for by those who have less. But those who have more money, they generally seem to be suffering more than those who have less. Maybe not physically, but mentally, certainly so. Ambarish Prabhu, who was born with a silver spoon in his mouth and a steering wheel in his hands, being born into the Ford fortune, he said in his childhood and youth, he had a practical education, seeing how the very rich people, he was born in a very rich family, how they're simply suffering and engaged in pettiness. That was his education. Then he came to Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet. So, the next verse. O learned Uddhava, those who fix their consciousness on me, giving up all material desires, share with me a happiness that cannot possibly be experienced by those engaged in sense gratification. There's a story which appeared in an early edition of Back to Godhead. Early means in the West. It was early, means in the 1960s sometime. This was an article contributed by Hanuman Prasad Poddar of the Gita Press in Gorakhpur, an English article. And it was, became, when I was new in ISKCON, it was commonly the subject or the theme of dramas. So the story is that there's a river. On one side of the river, people are living very nicely and peacefully and happily. And on the other side, people are walking around carrying big, heavy bags of rocks. And the people on the, and whoever carries more rocks, that's considered very prestigious. There's no reason to or benefit in doing so. But according to their culture and their long-standing tradition, we carry rocks. So from time to time, the people, they on the rock-carrying side of the river, they come to the edge of the river and they see the people on the other side. And people on the other side say, come, come, we just come over and join us. And we can't come, we've got, you know, these rocks, we'll drown with the rocks and we have to carry these rocks. How can we give them up? Yeah, you just throw them down. But it's, you know, it's my sacred duty. It's my family tradition. We can't do that. Then from time to time, someone actually throws the rocks down and crosses the river, and everyone holding the rocks, they condemn. See what he's doing. Traitor, he's given up the rocks and he's gone and joined the enemy. But all you have to do is give up the rocks, which have no use to you, but you get some sense of happiness of thinking that I'm a good, responsible member of society, carrying my rocks like everyone else and upholding our long-standing tradition. And actually, I carry more rocks than almost everyone else, so I'm a very prestigious member of society. But there's no happiness in that. And you can just throw it off and go to the other side and live happily. But they're bound by family tradition and by the absurd sense of happiness that they get from carrying rocks. So they can, like this, people who maintain material desires, they cannot, it's just not possible for them to experience the kind of happiness that Krishna experiences and wants us to share with him. It's not possible. You can't carry big bags of rocks of material desires and be happy in Krishna consciousness. I'll just read a little more. Although, this 11th canto, this Uddhava Gita, actually it's like Bhagavad Gita, but in more detail. It's very important, actually. It's just, what to say? It's so important. So, one who does not desire anything within this world, Krishna says, who has achieved peace by controlling his senses, whose consciousness is equal in all conditions, and whose mind is completely satisfied in me, finds only happiness wherever he goes. What is the purpose of life? To be happy. To enjoy. But we can only be happy in Krishna consciousness. So this is our real self-interest. Nate vidu swartha kating hi Vishnu. This word swart means self-interest. And generally in Hindi it's considered like not a very good term. Someone who's interested in their own self-interest. But actually everyone is swartha bhilashi. Everyone wants their own self. You can't not do that. But we should know that our real self-interest lies in being selfless, in atmanivedanam, offering ourselves to Krishna. Anyway, we belong to Krishna. But if we just submit that, all right, Krishna, I'm going to give up this pantomime of being different from you, having a self-interest, having any interest separate to you, and I'll just do what you say. Then one enjoys the happiness of being with Krishna. So one who has fixed his consciousness on me desires neither the position or abode of Lord Brahma or Lord Indra. How about that? We can't imagine what that means. How exalted is that abode? People want to be, you see the young boys practicing, playing cricket, they want to be the next generation Sachin Tendulkar. They want to be like him. Or different people are vying now, who will be the next prime minister, even though there's still a prime minister there. And theoretically he could run for office in the next general election, but it's generally understood that Congress's very little hopes will be even less if they keep the present prime minister as the candidate. So the question is, who's next? Who'll be the prime minister? Or someone may want to be the political leader of Pakistan, which is not a very good idea, seeing as most of them end their life earlier than they would have if they simply died naturally. Either they get hung or blown up or die in a plane accident. These kind of things happen. to lead, but still people want. So they're aspiring for a big position. But what about Brahma, Indra, far, far above being the head of Pakistan? Or, believe it or not, the position of Sachin Tendulkar. Or Imran Khan. Once I was on a train and there were a couple of Pathans, they looked like, they were like huge guys. They were actually from Pakistan and they were talking with some Indian boys who were very impressed by these big, you know, very big-bodied people. And and one of them said, he's Pakistani Muslim, and said that this Imran Khan, wo to insan nahi hai, wo superman hai. He's not an ordinary human being. He's a super, he's like almost, they're saying he's God. Imran Khan, for the benefit, oh, you all know, you're all from India, but maybe you're a little young. He was, that time in India there was Kapil Dev, and in Pakistan there was Imran Khan. Who's the greatest cricketer in the world? In the world means in between Pakistan, India, South Africa, West Indies and Australia. That's all. Because there are a few other countries that play cricket, but they're not very good. So, the position of Lord Brahma or Lord Indra, a devotee doesn't desire it. It never crosses his mind that he might want to be Lord Brahma. It's just, he's quite happy. Patrang Pushpang Palangtai, offering flowers to Krishna. Why am I going to be Lord Brahma? What am I going to do that for? I'm offering flowers to Krishna. What should I be Lord Brahma for? Of course, you can be offering flowers to Lord Krishna as Lord Brahma also, but you've got so many distractions and you have so many things to look after. You have to have four heads to process it all, and that's only for the smallest universe. Nor an empire. A devotee does not aspire for an empire on the earth, nor sovereignty in the lower planetary systems, nor the eightfold perfection of yoga. People, they go through so much difficulty to become a yogi and do things like walk over a river. The Lord doesn't care. Nor liberation from birth and death. Such a person desires me alone. And therefore, starting a new section here, Krishna's talking philosophically about Uddhava's asked Krishna about why there's so many different philosophies. So Krishna answers that. And then Krishna, at this point, he goes off subject a bit and starts talking about his devotees, which is also philosophical. But I won't read that section now. But just the first verse, it's a well-known verse, at least it's quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Krishna says to Uddhava, Natata me priyatama atma yonaya na shankaraha nacha sankarshano na shrir naivatma cha yatha bhavan. My dear Uddhava, neither Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Sankarshan, the goddess of fortune, nor indeed my own self are as dear to me as you are. And according to Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, Krishna was going to say in a general way, none of these are as dear to me as my devotee. But then Krishna saw, there's Uddha, he's my devotee, so none of these are as dear to me as you. Yatha bhavan. So, Hare Krishna, any question about this? Yeah. Don't ask me about Imran Khan. I mean, that's enough prajalpa for one class. Shouldn't be any prajalpa, but anyway, sometimes we show these kind of examples. I mean, people actually believe that, I mean, it's actually, they think like this. And we can just quote this kind of thing to show how absurd people are. and how they actually think this is right and something very wonderful and desirable. And here we are, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, studying Srimad Bhagavatam. Just those partans, they were feeling such ecstasy in because of being from the same country as Imran Khan. What a perverse reflection of the ecstasy a devotee feels from having a relationship with Krishna. Yeah, go on. In the absolute truth, there can be different perspectives also, yes? Just like Mother Yashoda, she doesn't think that Krishna is dancing with the gopis. Yeah, it's the same Krishna, and she sees all, in the morning, she sees all bite marks all over his body from the gopis biting him, and she thinks, well, maybe yesterday, she makes some other explanation. Maybe when he was out taking the cows, and he fell over, or something like this. It's beyond her imagination that Krishna is having nocturnal pastimes with the gopis, because as far as she's concerned, he's just a little boy. It's not possible for him. It doesn't happen in little boys. So there's different perspective, but they're all within the framework of reality, of sanity. There's so many varieties. Some will say Vaikunthanath, he is supreme. Others will say Ayodhyapati is supreme. Someone will say that Vrajesh is supreme. And then Krishna, but who's Vrajesh? Well, actually there's Nanda Maharaj, so Vrajesh is Sutta, the son. And then others say, no. Chandravali is supreme. No, Radharani is supreme. So, no, actually it's followers of Chandravali, they say Krishna is supreme. But the followers of Radha say, no, Radha is supreme. So, ultimately we're Shaktas. If you really want to, the highest theism is Shakta, but not this cutting buffaloes and goats, not that kind of. Oh, we got a bhakta there. All through the class, he didn't say. Now he's saying, someone appreciated something at last. So everything, devotees are smartas, we follow Vaishnav Smriti. We're Shaktas, we worship Shakti, Radharani. We're Advaitavadis, there's Advait, there's only Krishna, no one else. We're Dvaitavadis, Radha Krishna, everything. Whatever you want to say. Sahajya, yeah? Sahajya. Sahaj means easy, natural, so bhakti is the easier natural path. So, whatever you want to say. We've got a better version of it. Anything else? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.